Come see Breakthrough Academy at Build Show Live. Scan the QR code or click the link in the description for tickets. Use code BTA26 for 25% off.
You used to be in charge of selling about 600 homes a year. How did you manage that?
I really like to attribute it to our approach and really tying it back to understanding and knowing and putting our customer at the forefront of everything that we did.
What do you think you guys were doing that others weren't?
Our big piece that we really focused in on was understanding our data. So where were we meeting our customers' expectations? Where were we failing? Where did we need to improve and focus every single quarter? I think something that everybody could do right away, it's just a post-project three-question review. What went best? Where can we improve? And who do you know who needs similar services?
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Most contractors struggle to build 4 to 10 houses a year. Well, today's guest, Charlene Barrett, sold 600. That's hundreds of millions in sales. Today, we're going to go through with her what contractors are getting wrong when they're scaling from 1 to 10 million, and how to use referrals and reviews to supercharge your sales, and how to deliver a world-class service that customers love at scale. This is an episode you don't want to miss. Charlene, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Stoked to have you. Really enjoyed getting to know you this last year, I guess, for working with BTA. And there's some things that came up in your history that I really wanted to talk about today. And the number one like stat, I guess you could say, or thing that I noticed was you used to be in charge of selling about 600 homes a year. How did you manage that?
Yeah, I would say that was in our peak. So we sold anywhere on a slow year around 300 all the way up to 600. And honestly, between, you know, market, consumer confidence and all that good stuff, I really like to attribute it to our approach and really tying it back to understanding and knowing and putting our customer at the forefront of everything that we did.
Yeah, it's a large amount of homes. This is all in the Northern Alberta area or Edmonton area. Whereabouts were all these home sales done?
Yeah, so this was all in the Edmonton area. And when we were at our peak, we were selling both multifamily and single family homes. So it wasn't one type of home. We were really offering the market a variety of different home types at different price points to really make sure that people could pick what worked for them.
Now, you when we prep for this, you had mentioned, hey, we're doing quite a bit with the referral side, the review side of the organization. That's what drove a lot of this. Not all of it, obviously, but a large portion of it. What do you attribute that to? Like, was that something that you initiated going into this? Is something you wanted to get done? I guess, how did that kind of even start?
Honestly, when we think about sales and marketing at the end of the day, referrals and reviews are critical, right? It helps create that social trust when people are looking for you, right? People that are confident in their whole process with you and that they're going to refer you to their friends and family. And so we also know that it's a lot easier typically and costs us a little bit less to be able to get a referral or a repeat buyer. Although in the home industry, we know not people are, you know, building homes every year. It's usually every 3 to 5 years, that it's important to make sure that we're focused in there at the end of the day.
Now, everybody wants referrals. I get it. I mean, that's usually the highest value or client you're going to get. But what do you think you guys were doing that others weren't?
Honestly, I don't know if it's that others weren't doing it. Our big piece that we really focused in on was understanding our data. So where were we meeting our customers' expectations? Where were we failing? Where did we need to improve and focus every single quarter? Right, really dive in there, but also understanding that we did use a third-party survey platform, and we were really focused in on would they refer. Right, we wanted to know and understand that net promoter score, and if we were in that 80th percentile or higher, we knew we were doing something right. And then we would dive into the data behind it to really know where we were going right, and where we needed to course correct.
What are some big things you found out looking at the data? What came out of it?
Anything from honestly. Things that really tied to KPIs. So if there was a lot of what we call deficiencies at possession, more than 10, their experience was poor because they felt like things were left and not completed on time, right? So being really intentional about making sure that we were educating our customers, setting expectations, driving the team towards what our customers thought should be standard. So less than 10 deficiencies is acceptable. They were much happier. They're more willing to refer, is one example.
Cool. Yeah. So you're taking like the intangible, like, will someone like us enough to refer us, and making it tangible with some key KPIs and patterns along the way.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, when we had prepped, you talked about the importance of the customer experience and how that was different than just customer service. Can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of people think that customer service and customer experience are the same thing. And customer service is actually just a part of your customer experience. When we think about customer experience, it's really your full journey. So from the very first touch point that a customer ever engages with you at, so that could be a Facebook ad, all the way through their sales process into operations and then beyond. Customer service is really that one point in time. So customer experience, I'm going to call it the team sport. Everybody wears a hat. Customer service is almost like an individual. It tends to be very reactive. It's basically everything that's gone wrong rolls downhill, and this one person picks up the phone to deal with the issue at hand and try to resolve it for that customer as best as possible so that you can move forward in a positive manner. So that's really the biggest difference between it. And customer service has a way easier job if we're really great at doing and systemizing our customer experience.
Yeah. And it's almost like if you're really focused on customer service, you're almost just like reacting to the situation. You may not actually nail it with the customer, but if you think through and design the experience right from the first brand interaction all the way through, you can actually have a more controlled experience that has a more predictable result in the end. Is that kind of what we're speaking to?
Yeah.
So I guess when you look at the customer experience, what do customers remember most? What are the things you pinpointed on? Maybe some of the data you've found, the experience you've had doing this yourself for many, many years. What matters most to the customer along the way?
It's about the interaction. It's about emotions, and it's about how we've made them feel along the way. So we can all deliver a really technical sound build or, you know, do a beautiful job landscaping. But if the experience was clunky, not smooth, they got frustrated, what happens is they remember the negative or they remember the positive in that experience. So it's really about emotions. And our goal is here is about building trust with our customers so that they continue to refer their advocates, they turn into repeat buyers. And so when we think about behavioral science, there's a rule called the peak end rule. And so people basically evaluate their experience based on two outcomes. So it's the peak. So the point where they felt the most intense emotion that we've created, be it positive or negative. And then it's the end. So how the experience is wrapped up, right? Or how the company has resolved an issue at the end of the day.
So if I do a beautiful job and make it all look pretty, this is just like the baseline expectation. It's actually how you made me feel through all of that that ends up mattering more.
Yeah. So like, think about you're going to go to a high-end restaurant, right? You're going in for a really great steak that you've heard about. But the waiter is rude. It took 2 hours for you to get your steak. The table was dirty. Do you think you're going to go back there even if the steak was exceptional?
Probably not. Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah.
So within that, I guess, what did you pinpoint along the way? Like, what is the peak experience for somebody? Obviously, we would know kind of what the end is. It's when the handoff is happening. But what are some of the key peaks that you're like, okay, this is actually, is it midway through the job? Is it predictable or is it always different?
Honestly, it's about how intentional you are through the experience. So if we think about mapping our customer experience and understanding our baseline, the whole goal is that we make sure that we really understand our customer. We want to be curious. We want to listen. We want to ask questions. We want to get to know them more than just the job itself. What's important to them? Who they are? Do they have family? Do they have dogs? And so the piece where I talk about peak experience, it's really all about that moment where they go, wow, you really understand me, you're listening to me, and that you've been able to pick on something there to really elevate that experience for them along the way.
The ideas that we talk about in this episode today are really only as good as your ability to implement them. If you're a growth-minded contractor who wants to systemize faster, our content, our coaches, and our community has you covered. Book a call with our team today in the link in the description. So I'd imagine this starts even in the sales conversations that get brought forward into the actual. Can you describe some of these even to specific stories or examples where you've done this?
Yeah, for sure. So my past life, we were really intentional about letting our entire teams know that they could go beyond. And there was a budget there, and they could either do it on behalf of themselves, or the team could come together and bring together their budgets to do a bigger wow. One example that I do have, we had a young couple that was expecting. They were putting all their money into buying their first duplex. And family lived out of the country, and they were saving money so that they could set up their nursery. They weren't sure what they could do. Well, the marketing team was actually closing a show home that had a full nursery in it. And the team came together, heard this story with the sales professional, and upon possession day, we made sure that their entire nursery was set up for them. Brought together our dollars and bought diapers and some outfits and bibs, and really just did a whole moment for this couple so that they could come to their home and feel anchored. Made it feel one step closer to home. What an amazing wow moment. Showcases that the sales team really listened to that story and their journey through their process of building their first home.
Yeah. So you're kind of even identifying it like this is going to be like the peak experience for them. And we're writing it into the customer experience before they even realize it. So we're not hoping for it to happen randomly. We're not just saying, hey, hopefully at one point they walk out and get wowed by the work we've done. You're saying, no, it'll happen on Tuesday. And here's what we're going to do. And we planned it all the way from that first sales convo. Okay.
And that was something really big, right? And they don't always have to be really big, and they don't always have to be big moments. And we always call them wow moments, but they can be really intentional. It's something around from a builder's hat, right? On possession day, what have you learned about the customer that's that wow moment? We had a site supervisor who was moving in a family right before Halloween. And they were going to be the first family on the street. They love Halloween. Well, there was no places to go trick-or-treating. So upon possession day, he did a whole Halloween basket with treats and coloring, and made a whole moment and an experience around Halloween, knowing the family just loved Halloween, just to create that special moment. Could be something as simple as, you know, their fur babies and their love for their dogs. And on possession day, it was always intentional to go, what's something special you can do? So custom water dishes or a gourmet dog package from the local dog store, right? So always thinking about making sure you know your customer. It's an opportunity to connect. It's an opportunity to show that you're really listening, that you truly care.
Now let's talk about the opposite of this, because sometimes peak experience can be very negative. It could be the one thing you remember that is the reason you'll never work with that person again. Where are we getting this wrong in the industry right now? Where are we creating negative peak experiences? What are the patterns you've seen in some of this?
You know, at the end of the day, you tie it down to a few things, but one of the biggest thing is communication and active listening and educating our customer along the way. But it's all about, where are we losing trust? Right. So if we think about communication, it's not that we're talking too much most of the time. It's that we're creating silence. We're creating moments where the customer is filling their head with stories. So on the building side, right, custom build or even a renovation side, you're going for permits. That could be 3 weeks. That could be 2 months. You've told the customer that's what it's going to be, and I'll follow up with you when I get the permit. Well, man, that's a lot of silence, right? Can you imagine the stories that are going through their head about what's going on? Even a no update is an update.
Right.
Right? So it's super important. Things like unannounced schedule changes. Weather impacts us all at some point in the construction industry when we're thinking about landscaping or if we're thinking about roofing. And we see it as status quo, but we need to make sure we're proactive in communicating. We let them know and educate them before weather event ever happens that could be possibilities. We used to call this, you know, inoculating the customer, letting them know what to expect, what could go wrong and what can go right, so that they're not surprised when we have to make changes. My market, my goodness, we just had the most rain we've ever had in June on record. I can only imagine the amount of delays in some of the projects from contractors in our market that they've had to make sure they're communicating when they can get in there and do it, right? It's the cost creep. It's a surprise at the end of a project because you fixed something, but you didn't communicate it. Cleanliness, as they say, is next to godliness, right? So a messy site is not acceptable. Show respect to the home. Those are a few examples.
And do you think this is often due to just like avoiding the conflict in the conversation, or maybe a lot of us are just too busy to do it? Like, what do you think gets in the way from being good communicators?
You know, honestly, I think that sometimes what happens is we're head down and we're just focused on execution. We're focused on execution. We're thinking about what we need to get done. And we forget sometimes that there's a customer on the other end, right? We need to make sure we're really intentional and have a good structure and understanding of what great a customer experience is, who our customers are, and how we make sure we're going above and beyond their expectations. And so, like I said, that messy job site, even if it's a home that's under construction versus renovation, coffee cups left inside, making sure you're doing a cleanup, sweeping up after, because as much as we like to say you can't go visit your home while it's under construction without a representative, we know they're going into their home and taking a walk through it anyway, right? So always making sure that we have high expectations around experiences.
Yeah, and I imagine there's a way in which we can build this into our workflow. So how did you start to do this with Brooks? How did you start to do this with Brookfield? And like, what are the things to make this a bit more of a repeatable system versus just a great idea that I do randomly on a Tuesday?
Yeah. You know, when we talk to our members today, one of the big things we talk about is your sales process. Well, your sales process is actually a part of your customer experience process. And so this doesn't need to be complicated. It's really just taking a step back and thinking, when do my customers engage with me? And so I like to think it in three chunks, right? You've got your pre-work, your pre-job. So this is, you know, your marketing all the way to signing of a contract. What is that experience? Then you've got your operations. So I'm actually executing, and then I have my post. So then you go, when does a customer engage with me in each of these three phases? And you just map it. Could be in an Excel document. If you left sticky notes on a whiteboard, you can brainstorm this out with your team. It helps you understand what your current baseline is. It's really simple. And then you're going to take a step back and you're going to go, what's my phone always ringing for? Mm-hmm. Right? Where's the friction in the business that I'm hearing about all the time? And so that's your opportunity to take a step back, dive in, get to the root cause, develop your operational SOPs and KPIs around it, and to help measure it and implement it and train your team. So it's really about what's the experience look like, keep it simple, and then dive into where you're feeling those friction points, because that's ideally where something is broken, either operationally, process, or customer expectation setting.
Could you give us some specifics? I know you already gave a couple stories on this, but like, give me some specifics on what this actually can look like. So sales is doing X, they're documenting what, where, then from there, that's being taken to who. Like, can you walk me through an example of this?
Yeah, for sure. So at a high level, when I did an audit at my past company, and so we've come to realize that a customer could engage with up to 9 individual team members during the journey of them building a home. That's substantial.
That's a lot of people, yeah.
That's a lot of people that we need to make sure know and understand an exceptional experience. One of the biggest areas that we saw huge opportunity, besides, I'm not going to focus as much on sales, but sales handoff to production. One thing that we were very intentional in doing and understanding is we wanted to make sure that A, that was a smooth handoff. So what did that look like? Who are the homeowners downloading the sales notes, talking about the customer, doing doing a formal introduction. And then they would go to what was called a construction customer specialist. And this was a role that was unique to Brookfield that was really focused in ensuring that that customer had a smooth journey during their construction process, that every touch point that that homeowner had was defined. The expectation was set on how that role was bringing the customer through that journey, all the way through to educating them all the way up to possession, and connecting the dots with the team who was building the home. You know, these were the deficiencies we're seeing, that type of thing, which we would see reflected in the, you know, would they recommend us scores in our surveys.
Cool. So with that, like there's 9 people involved in the situation you're involved in, but like, how do you train this into the team so everyone knows, hey, this is a part of how I'm going to make sure this communication is held forward in my role? How do you make sure everyone's on the same page?
Yeah. So we did things a little bit differently. Everybody's focused in on their customer at the end of the day, but we were extremely intentional of setting a company-wide strategy as to what those expectations look like, what we expected or what we were shooting for deliverables through our surveys that we would do. And how did we put, you know, like what you're asking, how do we make sure we put, you know, paper to and theory to action? And so there was a few different things we did. Training. So we established training. There was 10 modules that every single team member from the receptionist who answered the phone all the way up to executive had to do. So that was really anchoring our theory, our beliefs, and our expectations around how customer experience, what customer experience meant at the company. Then what we would do is we'd go, for example, I talked about the role of the customer construction customer specialist. We would dive in and go, okay, we've got our baseline, but now what do you do? How do you interact with the customer? What does this look like? What are our scripts like? What do we need to do to go above and beyond? And what? How do we measure that? So some of those measurements were things like less than 10 deficiencies at possession, because they would work with the construction team to make sure we were meeting those objectives. And so it's not one person carrying the torch. It's really each person diving in and understanding and training and scripting along the way what that expectation looked like and how they were going to be measured on what that looked like as well.
Now, I know most of our listeners and actually probably a lot of the members you work with don't have nine people talking to one customer. They might have two. No. They might have three, right? But there is always a bit of a pass off. Can we bring this down to like the average contractor that we would work with at BTA, at Breakthrough Academy, and where the biggest like areas are for help there to make sure that there's good communication across the team?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's about being intentional, right? As owners, we tend to keep everything in our head, and it's really important to make sure, yes, this is your vision. This is how you want your customers to feel and engage and interact with you, but we're going to map it. We're going to say, this is who we are. We're going to say that we use our CRM for communication and really hone in on what that looks like and what each person is truly responsible. It doesn't need to be nine people.
Yeah, it's usually two, I would imagine. It's usually the owner, a project manager, maybe there's a salesperson involved. It's two to three people.
And what are your expectations? How much information do you want that customer to have? So if you are saying you are a luxury builder or a luxury renovator, for example, well, guess what? They're expecting you to have a high touch approach, right? What does high touch mean? And how does it show up in your processes between your salesperson and your project manager and maybe the site person, the person on site? How does that show up? How do you clean up sites? How do you protect their home at the end of the day and the beginning of the day? How do you communicate? Is it phone call? Is it automated?
And you said something earlier too, like, what are all the things that are coming to my phone all the time? And that's a good audit list of the things that you might want to build a good process around that's documented.
Yeah. You know, if you've got, you know, if you're getting an example would be, you know, you've got it's not even your customer, but you're doing renovations and you've got the neighbor calling you all the time because they're frustrated about the noise, about the mess, right? Yeah. The parking, the issues. Well, you're going to build in a step of proactivity to go, I'm actually going to knock on the door of the neighbors of the house that I'm doing work on. I'm going to let them know that we're going to be there, our anticipated time frame, what to expect. And if they have issues, here's my card. Let's build some rapport. That's going above and beyond in a moment that your customer may actually really, really value because it's keeping us as good neighbors, right?
Got it. So yeah, in a sense, we're building out processes for our company, but we're doing it through the lens of the customer. We're thinking through from first interaction to last interaction, what are all the things that will create wow moments, will avoid those deep dip of like, I hate you moments, and create a good lasting impression that ultimately hopefully will yield in a great project, but also potentially good reviews and referrals down the road. As we start to look at this now, let's talk specifically about reviews. Let's talk specifically about referrals. Let's say we've built this roadmap out. How do we do this in a way that creates 5-star reviews versus somebody that would give us one, but they just never actually did, right? Which I think happens a lot when we're not intentional about getting those reviews in the end.
Yeah. And it is about being intentional. It is about if you provide an exceptional experience, right? And you map out your customer experience, you should be able to get that 5-star review because we talked about, you know, anybody can execute really well, but it's how we, the emotions that we connect to it, which makes them more willing to do a review, to put their name behind something, to go, yeah, I trust this company that you should go work with them. You're my friends and family. But it's also how we ask about it. So a lot of the times we complete a job, we drop off the invoice and we walk away, right? Well, here's your opportunity. You've built a relationship. You be intentional about what that final walkthrough looks like, be it if it's a roofing job or a landscaping job, or, you know, you've done a major renovation or you built a house. And in that, you create a conversation out of it. You know, how was your experience? What could we have done better? Are you satisfied with your job? Do you know anyone that could, you know, utilize our services? Turns it into a conversation. If they say yes, fantastic. then you want to make sure the process is easy.
Yeah, I always found, I'd always ask people, you know, what was the most memorable moment of this project with you or to, that we did together? And it's like, they would explain it. And then I would say, you know, is there, would you be open to writing about that and just letting the public know and giving us a review? Now, do you, when you ask for it, is that it? Or do you have a way to follow up on that ask? Like, because not everyone's going to probably do it right away. So how do you make sure reviews actually start to come in?
And that's very true, right? I hate to say it, you know, the 20% of the people that are dissatisfied are usually the loudest versus the 80%. And so there's some intentionality around it, just like when we're trying to, you know, get the sale or, right, get the project with the customer, is to be intentional around how many steps it takes to get them to do the review. How easy do we make it for them? And there's a bit of a process there. We don't want it to feel robotic.
Yeah.
But there's probably going to be some automated systems behind it because you've had the conversation with them.
Yeah, even in working with some of your members, like what are some of the best automated processes you've seen? What's a quick, simple, like good tip for that everyone could take? Say, hey, if I want to make sure I get reviews, here's what I'm using. Here's how many times they follow up. Like, is there anything like just rules here or good processes or software even that we could use for this?
Software is any, basically, sure. A lot of the CRM systems allow you to do it. You can do follow up by text. You can do follow up by email. Do something super simple. I always say, you know, my hairdresser has it mastered, right? Like it's something automated, a quick review. They create a simplicity around it. Let's make it simple for them versus telling them to go somewhere and telling them to anchor. Like we don't want them to do a lot of work. We want to make it easy for them at the end of the day. And you just have to continually follow up. And part of that intentionality is also around what you do when you're after the job is done. A lot of times we go silent and we forget about things. And so there's an opportunity there just to keep incorporating it. You know, congratulations, you're 1 year in your home. We would still love to be able to hear from you about your experience. Keep it simple. Go here to write us a review.
Could you give some examples on this? Because there's one way of looking at this, which is I've asked for the review and maybe I even sent them a text or an email reminder after the project. They still haven't reviewed. I don't want to bother them. I don't want to become the negative, you know, thing all of a sudden. I want to be able to just leave them alone. How do we continue the conversation with them afterwards in a good, authentic way that reminds them who we are and can ask for either a review or a referral down the road?
Yeah, I think that there's a few different ways. First, we just think about what we just talked about, right? There's a conversation, there's an ask, there's some follow-up. Maybe you make the follow-up even more intentional. Maybe you want to say, I would love to write a case study about you and take a picture of your project with you in front of your new home. Or can I interview you? You know, thinking about formalities that way. They said they loved us. Maybe they'd be willing to be on camera and do that for us and do something like that more intentional than sending them over to Google, for example. But you know, one of the things that we would do is I would get a stack of cards on everybody's 1 year in their home. And I would go through and I would write a personal message and a signature and incorporate my card if they would like to contact me, a personal touch. From a salesperson's perspective or their journey through their construction perspective, hopefully we've gained enough information to go, maybe we've captured a key anniversary or maybe they had a baby a month after that they moved out of the home. Sending a, you know, happy first baby 1 year, whatever those things look like, there's those personal touches to show that was great. We sold you a home. Now we're not paying attention. We want to be intentional on how we're paying attention. But the other side of it is dependent upon your industry. Is there an opportunity to have them be part of some kind of valuable educational content? How to maintain your landscaping, how to maintain your home. It's time to, you know, service your furnace. Have you checked your humidity levels lately? Like giving really great educational resources so that you feel like you're turning into now a trusted advisor after the job's been done. Cool. So if they have questions, they're going to reach out to you, which is what you want. You continue the engagement, you continue the communication, keeps you top of mind. Somebody needs their services. Have you tried so-and-so?
Yeah, I hear two things. It's like the automation reminders are automated. The personalized... Yep. You know, communication is what you're really trying to be. Say, hey, I hear you. I know you. And I'd imagine when you have, you know, less customers, larger projects, you can really dial in that personalization. If you're doing, you know, home services and you have 2,000 projects a year, you might want to have, well, like you said, more educational resources. So it's still value add, but it's not just an ask for, hey, can you refer us? Hey, can you review us? Yep. Okay.
That yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. And any just other good thoughts around that when it comes to some of the members you've worked with and what they've been doing that you've seen really work?
What they've been doing and what really works is just the intentionality around getting to know that homeowner, right? I've heard, I've talked with landscaping members that have talked about the fact that they've surprised a homeowner with like something that was really special to them that they really liked, a special flower, or like there's colors that they like. And so they've brought them, you know, a pot of those flowers, that type of thing. There's just different things that you could do. And like I said, you can be intentional about it. Maybe that's the goal in your projects. Maybe every year you drop off a pot of flowers that you know it's their favorite flowers for the front stoop. Whatever that looks like, however you build it in to maintain and create that relationship for the long run.
There's one thing you mentioned too, just about writing a card, whether it's a birthday card or a Christmas card or something to that effect. I remember we used to do this. I used to call it like giving true gratitude, which was like, yeah, I could give a bottle of wine or I can give a little gift. And I usually do. But it's like, let's add it a not just a stamped, you know, hey, thanks for your business card. Let's actually take time to write these. And sometimes it would take me 1 to 2 days just to do it. But I would basically pull up a list of all the people that I've either worked with. So vendors, customers, our staff, and then personally write them a message. And it wasn't just like a, hey, thanks for your business. It was, what's the one thing that I remember about this person that was super unique, stood out about who they are in my mind that I really appreciate about them. And I just picked that one thing to write about real quick. And that would be like the message. And I found most people didn't care about the gift as much as they cared about the thought that I put into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've kept cards aside because of a thoughtful note that was inside. Now, the cards that were just, like you said, standard with a stamp signature in it, they didn't get kept. They would go to recycling pretty quickly. But when you can really think about how you want to execute on that and, you know, to be able to be consistent on something like that, those are the types of things you can operationalize in your business to help you stand out against your competition.
Yeah. And there's a theme as we've been talking through all of this. It's like personalization, being intentional, really understanding the customer and writing those notes, having some automations behind that to remind you, and then bringing it back to that personalization where you're like, hey, I remember this. I know you are. Yeah. Bring it back to like the human level versus like a transactional level.
You're not just a number, right? You're not just a number. You're not just a paycheck at the end of the day.
Cool.
We truly care about your business and who you are.
Let's dive a little more specifically into referrals, because this is what drove a lot of business for you guys. Like, what do you think you did well? What do you think you guys could maybe done better? But why did referrals become such a big part of your focus when you were driving sales and marketing over at Brooksfield?
Honestly, at the end of the day, referrals was a piece of it that we needed to make sure we were being very intentional about. And so referrals, feedback, it all helped us be better. It all helped us understand where we could go. Our goal, because we did offer a variety of housing types, the best referral we could have was actually a repeat buyer, a self-referral where they went from, let's say, a townhome to a single family home, because they really enjoyed that experience with us. So 5 years down the road, they think, I still want to build with these people, right? That's your biggest compliment. But everything we just talked about, it's about paying attention to your customers. It's about getting to know who your customers are. It's about staying connected with your customers. A lot of the times you could have a salesperson in a community for 3 years, 4 years, right? And they develop community. And I used to go and say hi to the sales team, and they would have people coming in who sold from them, just stopping by to have a chat, creating community. Right. And that's how we're getting those referrals.
What do you think that separates? Let's say we have two contractors on either side. Both of them do great work. Both of them have kind of focused even on the customer experience during the project. One of them 3 years later is getting a referral from an old customer. The other one isn't. What's the difference?
The other one is not paying attention anymore.
They've kind of done their project that they're moving on.
Yeah. And I would say from a contractor perspective, most of the time that is that biggest opportunity is to go, what does it look like post-project?
How much time, touch points, what's the appropriate amount to kind of keep all the customers we've ever worked with in the loop and to maintain all those relationships? Did we do that for all customers over the last 10 years? How many times a year, once a year? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how much work are we putting into this beyond just our daily duties of producing the new projects on our plate?
Honestly, it's about you deciding what makes sense for your customer at the end of the day and who and what you want to represent for your customer. Maybe it's an annual review. Maybe there's an educational platform. So we were really big about making sure we were producing and educating our customers post, you know, after they took possession of their home, because we wanted to make sure they were maintaining a healthy home. Right. So that meant we were sending quarterly newsletters and that type of thing that we would work with our team to make sure we were producing blog posts and that type of thing. It's really for you to make that decision on what that looks like for you. I wouldn't say there's a right amount or a wrong amount. Dependent upon your market, US, Canada, and state specific, there's actually statutes of limitations and approvals and different things that you need to get to make sure you can do that type of work. But it's about really just going, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to set, which helps you project and create consistency and process and flow for your company.
And what did that yield for you? Like just looking at pure, just like sales every year from Brooksfield, how much came from referrals? How much came from repeat customers? How much?
You know, that's a great question. It was something our target was always try to shoot for 20 to 25%,
okay,
which is a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some years we'd get 10%. There's some years we'd get 15%. Some years we would get higher than that. It ebbed and flowed dependent. And we were always trying new things. It wasn't that we were, you know, you would put something out there and try it for 30 days and change. We would put something out there, try it out, do some tweaks and see what was sticking and what wasn't sticking. Really being truthful in the data of what we were doing. We did have automated referral programs with automated emails and so many steps through the way. What are they engaging with? What are they not engaging with? What are we getting rid of? What are we keeping? And so it's a process. It's a process to know and understand your customers. It's a process to make sure you're staying data, you know, anchored in the data and what it's telling you to help influence how you're communicating and what you're offering to your customer along the way.
Imagine everyone's data would be a little different. They have a different ideal customer. They have a different product. But was there anything just in the journey of looking at data to make more like personalized, you know, journey stuff for your customers? Is there anything that came out of the data for you? You're like, whoa, that I would have never expected.
It depended on what data we were looking at, right? When we looked at the referral data, there were so many different steps along the way. What were they engaging with? What were they not engaging with? We would just make those adjustments on those emails. When it came to the data from our surveys, if they said they would recommend, for example, yes, we would recommend. We would see things like it tied to the number of deficiencies at possession. So if they had a lot of deficiencies at their possession, they were way less likely to recommend us.
Right.
Well, operationally, now we need to anchor in on what that looks like. You know, was their site clean? There was just different data points along the way that really influenced things like, would they recommend? Would they refer? Right?
Yeah. We mentioned that earlier. As far as asking for referrals, when do we do it? How do we do it? How do we make it awkward and weird? Like, how do we make sure like we do it in the right way at the right time and yield good results from it in a way that feels genuine and on brand?
Yeah. So I'm a believer that you ask for the referral post, or you ask for the referral at, you know, final job walkthrough, because you've proven, hopefully you've had a great experience through the journey. You've had an opportunity to go, are you satisfied? Is there anything else that I can do to make this experience better? Are you going to action on it? Then action on it. And then you ask for the referral.
Yeah. I remember that there was like a script I used to have years ago. This is back when we used to do painting, but I'd say, you know, what was the biggest takeaway you got from working with us right now? And they'd be like, you know, this and this. It was your setup, it was your cleanup, it was your people, it was your thing. I'd be like, cool. Do you know anyone else that would get value from a service like this?
Exactly.
Right? And then there'd be a yes, there'd be a maybe, there'd be, I don't know. And then there was always, I will say this in my mind, there was always a bit of a breakdown after that because I didn't really know what to do after that. Like, what should I leave them with? How do I make sure that I stay a reminder in them? Like, what do I do after that?
Yeah, well, you know, on the housing side of things, there's a couple of things when we think about after the job. And it all depends on the service that you're offering or the product that you're offering, right? But if you offer something like warranty, a lot of the times what I'm hearing from our members is, we have 3 months warranty. We have 6 months warranty. Here's my contact. Please reach out if you have any issues or concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And we flip that on the head. Why don't we actually say we offer you 6 months warranty? We'll do a walk with you at 1 month to make sure everything is settling properly. 3 months, we'll go through your list and we'll have that completed with you for you within 30 days, circumstance permitting.
Yeah.
So how do you flip it? How do you become more proactive?
Actually, now that you mentioned it, we did do an annual call through. So this is when we had, you know, I had about 1,000 jobs a year. So we would, you know, painting, right? Smaller jobs. But we would do an annual call through of every customer we'd ever produced for the last 5 years and just check in how their project was doing, if it was still holding up. And then that would spark new conversation for, like you said, either rework or potentially referrals. Do you ask every single time after that? Like, how, or do you just ask the one time and then you leave it alone? You know what I mean? Like when you're doing that walk around a month later, 6 months later, do you ask again, or how does that come up in conversation, or is it more just through passing? They bring it up.
I think that there's always opportunity to ask. There's always opportunity to do a follow-up from an automation perspective. but know if they've already given you a referral. The worst thing you can do is just hugging someone if they've already given you a referral, right? But if you have somebody that's really, really happy with the work that you've done and they haven't given a referral, you could just say, how can I make this easy for you? Yeah. I would love for people to hear your experience.
So there's lots we've talked about, everything from like designing the customer experience, inserting kind of like custom, you know, personal touches along the way, asking for the referral, having a system. You mentioned it briefly, we didn't get into as much, but like having a system to measure quality, their net promoter, doing a survey with them. Is there anything that just everyone listening to right now could take that'd be an easy, quick win? Maybe a pattern you see with a lot of your members that it's like, hey, we all need to do a better job of this. And it's simple. What's like the low hanging fruit out of everything we've talked about?
I think something that everybody could do right away, and I'm a big believer in data, it's literally, and we've talked a little bit about this already, it's just a post-project 3-question review. What went best? Where can we improve? And who do you know who needs similar services? Right. It's something that's really simple that you can get really good concrete feedback on really quickly.
And that'll just tell you who to focus on, what the patterns are, and based on that, what can we do about it? Now, this might be a little outside of even just today's conversation, but you have, how many members are you coaching right now? 25-ish? 20?
23.
Is there any patterns you're seeing with your members that you never would have expected working with a bunch of smaller contractors in the space versus what you did over at Brooksfield? They're just like, oh, everybody has this kind of thing that I'm working with them on. And what is that? And what are you up to right now as a coach?
Honestly, I think most of the members that come in and the members that I work with in particular are all super passionate about the trade that they're in, right? As we know, they've come here, they want to systemize. And so I don't know if it's a surprising component. They all want to provide great customer experience, but it's not necessarily at the forefront of their decisions. They just really want to make sure they're operationalizing SOPs on execution. So they're very focused on execution and sales process, but not thinking about the total customer journey. And so that's definitely a trend that I am seeing that I'm hoping to, you know, work our way through. It's obviously a big piece of the puzzle, but it's a piece that I'm seeing from my lens.
Yeah, it's like they're coming at it from a perspective of, as a business, this is what we need to do to be structured well, and make, from an owner's perspective, here's what I can see as our problems and opportunities that we need to work on, versus flipping the script and saying, what's the customer seeing? And let's come at it from their eyes and build it from that perspective.
Yeah. So if you're implementing processes because you're trying to make it easier or you're trying to gather more information for your team to operate, a question you should be asking yourself is, does this create complexity for my customer? Mm. Does it make it easier for my customer? Does it make it more complex for my customer?
How do you balance that out between, like, is it always just the customer always wins? It's like whatever's best for the customer is what we're going to build, or you know what I mean? Because I think of the iPhone all the time where I'm like, man, this thing is so simple. My 2-year-old was able to figure out how to use it, but on the back end, it's super complicated versus like as a business owner, it's like, well, we kind of need it to be complicated for the customer so we can do it our way. Like how do you balance those two needs between what the customer is going to experience and when you as a company, how you need to operate?
It's a balance at the end of the day. And if you made it easier for your company, but all of a sudden your phone's ringing off the hook, did you actually help yourself at all because you implemented a process that created complexity for your customer? Probably not.
Yeah. And I would say, as I've done this for many years, and not to say I always make this decision, but I've almost never seen a good result of like, we make it harder for our customer, but easier for us in the back end. Almost every time it's like the biggest learning lesson I've had where I'm like, right. That felt good at the time in the meeting because like we want all the data a certain way, but we made that so hard for our customers, like they're not even using it anymore.
Yeah, you know, and I worked with the company I worked with was a North American company, right? And some of the divisions would go, there's an empty chair at the top of the table and that chair is the customer. Mm-hmm. When they're sitting around and talking about issues or trying to problem solve things, and it's like, okay, this is where we're at. Now let's make sure that we have the customer at the forefront of our decisions so that we're not creating more work for ourselves on the other side with the customer.
Did you ever have an advisory board of customers? Have you ever done that before or taken it? Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit? Not that everyone should or could do that, but I think a few listening probably could. We've tried this at BTA. It's been interesting actually but what came out of that?
Yeah. You know what? I actually really enjoyed it. And the goal with it is to make sure that the customers that you've asked to be on the panel know it's okay to talk about what went well and what went wrong, because that's the only way we're going to learn. We would do these big management treats. They would bring out these customer panels, usually six of them, a few critical, like, and then it was basically you bring out the panel and you ask them a bunch of questions and they give you the real genuine insights, right? The key there is that you're actually actioning what you should be actioning from those insights.
Right. If you're going to listen, be ready to do something about it.
100%. Always. I would have customers that would call me that were really, really upset. We would learn from it. It's important to own what we've done wrong, make it right. What did we learn? What did we change? And I would call them back up and have conversations and go, thank you. Thank you for your feedback. This is what we've done moving forward because you shared with us your frustrations.
If there's one common word through this entire conversation, it's to be intentional, is what you've kind of said to us this entire time.
Well, when we think about our customer experience, right, it's happening if we shape it or not. Mm-hmm. Right. And if it's just happening, you have no control to be intentional with it. But if you do take that step back, you can help really shape what that looks like so that each customer knows what to expect. So there's no surprises. They know what to expect if they're a repeat customer because they've gone through that experience. And it does create consistency and structure for your teams, right? When we start to think about SOPs and how we want to script things and how we want to shape things, but make sure they still feel authentic at the same time.
Totally. I think it could be quite exciting too. Like when I think about shaping the customer experience, it's kind of this neat like story I get to play in my brain that I'm like, I've always seen it this way, but it never comes out this way, except for maybe 10% of our customers. And I'm like, how do you make this for every single person across the board? And yeah, the answer is never as clean, as simple as it existed in your brain. But I think just working on these things one little piece at a time, like I think even for a lot of people, it's just getting their sales to production handoff dialed in a little bit more and really understand the communication channels between that. Having an asking for a referral versus not asking for a referral, putting in a piece of software that reminds you to talk to somebody after the job is done. Like those are little things that I think all of us kind of get, but it's like we've never stitched it together to be one narrative through the entire organization.
Yeah. Well, and I love your comment about the story, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a thing, that's a lens to take, is what story do you want your customers to tell about you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a story you can craft yourself ahead of time and be intentional. So final question for you again, as a BTA coach, what are you learning from this experience? Having a bird's eye view, getting to work with all these contractors at the same time. I imagine it's a little different than being just at Brooksfield, but what are you learning and what are you taking from this whole experience for yourself?
What am I learning? I'm loving it, to be honest with you. And we're all on different journeys and I think we need to be careful that we keep things simple, right? As we dive in, yeah, there's complexity there, but there's ways to make sure that when we're, you know, stuck in the day-to-day that we're able to pop our head up and really start to think about who that customer is, the journey that they're on. Every single one of my members are bringing their customers through different journeys, which I think is so aspirational. And everybody just wants to do right by their customer. And sometimes we just get stuck in, what the heck do we need to do to get there? And so I love going on that journey with them.
Are we as entrepreneurs making things really complicated all the time with all of our ideas?
Yeah, I think that sometimes there's like that, you know, what is the comment? The shiny object syndrome, right? It's like, I start here, I run here, I go there, I jump there. It's like, let's just pick something, pick one thing, pick one frustration, pick one opportunity that you can zero in on, fix it, try it, measure it, pick the next thing.
Okay. Well, then for those listening, if you guys want to interact in the chat, Charlene, if you want to read the chat responses as well on this one, but just anything that you got from today or just one thing that you're committed to this year on your customer experience and the one little change that you want to make would be a cool little addition today. So just write in the comments, let us know what you took from today, what you're going to take some action on. And if you have questions on any of this, feel free to put them in the comments as well. Me and Charlene will read through them. Okay.
Awesome.
Great. Okay. Well, Charlene, that was great. Anything else you want to say? Any other final thoughts?
Be intentional. Take control of your own customer experience.
All right. We will do this. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.